Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Football is many things. Unpredictable, exciting, colourful, passionate, absorbing, expensive.
Venal, infuriating, exasperating, time-consuming, depressing. But one thing it most certainly is not, is a level playing field.
Welcome to the famous sloping pitch. And we're back, and full of the requisite amount of joy. Oldham are about to embark on a first campaign in the Vanarama National League, and Stoke, impressively, managed to hit the bottom of the Championship before July was out. And since we last met, of course, Blatter and Platini have been cleared of corruption. Scotland are out of the World Cup, and Wales are in the World Cup. There's been Euro triumph, transfer madness, cheating, lying, sleaze, and Ronaldo is still behaving like a prick. Thank you, football, thank you, because it's down to your stupidity, immorality, incompetence and occasional joy that we're back for another season, secure in the knowledge that we won't be short of material. So thank goodness for that, Christopher, eh?
Yeah, well, as you say, much has happened in the couple of months since we last did one of these. England lost home and away to Hungary in the curiously unengaging Nations League, and also drew 1-1 with a German team who were wearing the women's team's kit. UEFA predictably planning to fine them, but they should just be more accepting and inclusive.
But you know, actually, the women's team's kit a kit that's the same. I mean, not.
I don't know if they had a kit partner.
They didn't. They didn't have like name tags in the back, did they?
I don't think so. No,
you don't think so.
But no, I think they just wanted to wear the women's outfits. And this is who the Germans are, you know, I say live and let live.
And are UEFA trying to fine them? You say.
That's right, yes.
They love a fine, UEFA, don't they?
Well, they do. They love an authoritarian act. I mean, I think what it is the Germans have four little stars above their badge because they've won four World Cups. Yeah. And ladies, German women, only have two. Right. And so they had the wrong number of stars. But it's not like they've overdone it. They've reduced the number of stars.
Yeah.
So, but they're going to fine them for that.
No, I suppose the alternative is not to fine them, but to take away two of their World Cup wins.
Yes, I think so. I think that would be a very appropriate punishment for this small infraction. I'm touched that the Germans should make such a gesture. You know, and obviously these things, gender identity is a difficult thing for the Germans. They already have more pronouns than any other nation. And the idea was to promote the women's Euros, which their counterparts were until the last minute favourites for, weren't they? And I bet they're glad that Sepp Blatter never got his plan to make the ladies wear hot pants past the squalid daydream stage. And speaking of Sepp Blatter, you mentioned that he'd been found not guilty of corruption. Not strictly true. Sepp Blatter and Michel Platini were found not guilty of a particular fraud after a 7-year investigation into payments between the two in 2011. Blatter described this mysteriously as a victory for international football.
So it's a bit like Fred West getting off a driving ban.
A little bit. I mean, the actual victory happened 7 years ago when they were both banned from being FIFA president. And Blatter's brilliant quote was, I've not been innocent of a lot of things in my life, but I was innocent of this. So,
you know, which is
not as self-aware as it might be. Boris Johnson went from being the prime minister with the biggest mandate in years to crapping things up so comprehensively that when he leaves office on September the 5th, he will have been in charge for an even shorter period than short-lived Theresa May. Yeah. And the Paris police chief apologised for using tear gas on Liverpool supporters at the Champions League final and for the fact that all the CCTV footage of the fiasco was deleted, as if it contained evidence of the January 6th insurrection or a Boris Johnson lockdown drinks party.
I loved Boris's sort of farewell speech, although he's still Prime Minister as we speak.
He's still hanging on.
You know, talking about all his great, great triumphs. And really was very pleased with himself. And I was minded to think that one day that somebody will say, they'll find some sort of statue which will say, I am Bozymandias.
Yes, King of Kings.
Look upon my works and
look
despair.
Upon my several achievements
and despair.
Yeah. Did you see that it emerged that Donald Trump has buried his first ex-wife, Ivana, on his golf course in Bedminster, New Jersey? Not at her request or because she loved golf. She was dead, yes.
Yes, good.
But because he can then reclassify the golf course as a cemetery and avoid paying three different kinds of property tax. Oh. I mean, he's an incredible fella, isn't he?
Oh.
And he now plans to use one of his other courses in Florida to bury his hopes of ever being president again.
I'm thinking that there might be a new Stephen King novel in this cemetery. Many ex-wives come out of the ground to wreak their revenge.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Ivana Trump is meant to have passed away, as she did recently, with mysterious injuries to her torso. So God only knows what happened to her.
Oh, dear, but that's worrying. Just a couple of things. Obviously, the Commonwealth Games, which is very much the Fiat Panda of international sport. I don't know whether you saw, there was a fantastic thing. Adam Peaty, Stoke fan, Adam Peaty, let me just add. Adam Peaty went to a school, a primary school, and was interviewed by the children. And one of the children, the first question they asked was, have you ever had a wee in the pool? And I thought, that's the right question. Sports personality of the year, that child, I think.
Yes, exactly. Well, our old friend Alan, who we used to share a flat with, an old school friend of mine, is a keen sub-aqua club member. And during the London Olympics, he and the rest of his club were tasked with, in exchange for sitting in the front row at the swimming, with going in the pool between the races and, you know, cleaning up all sort of God knows what sort of shit. I mean, they had a little sieve and they would collect vomit. And unbelievably, the swimmers would be making so much effort that the cameras would cut away from it, but they do throw up in the water while they're going. That actually does happen.
Very much the Pete and Dud, what's the worst job you've ever had? Sieving puke from the Olympic swimming pool. The great thing, by the way, about Adam Peaty was that he said, not only had he had a wee in a swimming pool, he did it every single time. He said, because they don't let you out, you know, you can't just get out and go for a wee. You're training. You've got to be there for 8 hours.
Now to Southend. I know that you saw this story.
Oh, yes.
About Southend acquiring new sponsors for their West Stand.
Yeah, it was a local local estate agent called Gilbert and Rose.
Yes.
And that was good and well done to them for getting that. But then they've decided to rename one of the stands, but hadn't clearly thought it through. And the stand is going to be called the Gilbert and Rose West Stand.
which is a fantastic mister. I mean, you know, you wouldn't want to buy a ticket for the Rose West Stand, would you? I mean, you could just go on the terraces in the Harold Shipman end. Yes, exactly. Pick up a tasty morsel from the Jeffrey Dahmer snack cabin.
Yes, yeah, or a limited view from the Boston Strangler seats.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And did you see, great, this is one of my favourite stories of the period we've been away, that Jens Lehmann, the former Arsenal goalkeeper, was accused of attacking a neighbour's garage with a chainsaw as part of a long-running dispute. Apparently he climbed up onto the roof and sawed through the beams, causing hundreds of thousands of euros worth of damage. And this was in Germany, so the euros worth of damage. The best bit, though, is that before the attack, the CCTV camera on the neighbour's house was cut by somebody. But the cameras then still run on backup battery power and transmitted pictures of Lehmann frenziedly attacking the neighbour's garage to his phone. And he just sent the police around. So he's completely banged to rights. It's fantastic. I mean, he thought he was invincible. Turns out he's just an invincible.
that's fantastic. Other questionable behaviours in Germany. Did you see the Leipzig Bayern Munich game, which was I think the first game of the season? Well, Olmo, the Spanish winger who did very well in the Olympics, I seem to remember, did a fantastic thing whereby he was invited to kick the ball out. Mm. By Bayern, in order for a player to get treatment. And what he did was he took the ball right to the touchline and left it so it wasn't fully over the line and did a little sign to the linesman, to the official, whatever it's called, assistant referee.
Still
in. And then, of course, the Bayern player went over to pick it up to take the throw.
Yeah. And ball.
Much renting of garments.
I like that very much. I'm watching Bayern Munich with more interest than usual this year because now they've got Sadio Mane from Liverpool, who's obviously a great player to watch and who we've seen a lot of in this country. But as part of the deal to take Sadio Mane to Bayern Munich, Sadio Mane has arranged for Bayern Munich to also sign Desiré Segbe-Azankpo, who played terrible season for Oldham Athletic, scored 4 goals, all local barn doors completely safe during his tenure. And he's now a Bayern Munich player. We're in the weird non-league and he's in the fucking Bundesliga.
And I think he played in that game, strangely enough. This is Mane's Jimmy Five bellies, isn't it? It's absolutely that. And Mel Steen, who was Gazza's agent, who died. Today, it's Thursday, today as we record this.
Oh, really?
It was famous for when he did the deal for Gazza to go to Lazio, for trying to get Lazio to put in his contract that they would give him a trout farm.
fantastic. I mean, this is also there's a parallel in the previous career of Joe Royal, who's resurfaced at Boundary Park. We'll have more of that in a moment. Joe Royal, when he was manager of Everton, he tried to sign a young Norwegian striker called Tor André Flo, who hadn't yet gone to Chelsea, so he was an unknown quantity. And as a young kid, and in order to do the deal, Tor André Flo wanted his mate to be signed as well. And Joe Royal managed to sign the mate and then cock up the Tor André Flo deal. So Everton ended up with the mate and not Tor André Flo, and the mate was a staunch stalwart of the reserves for a couple of months, and Joe Royal got sacked for that. As you know, actually, to mention this, I'm going up to Edinburgh tomorrow to oversee a show that I've written about the great black Yorkshire comedian Charlie Williams, which tackles the suggestion that some of his material back in the day was somewhat questionable. And so we'll see how that goes. But I have to say, I never expected to hear any of Charlie Williams' stuff spewing from the mouth of a candidate for the leadership of the Tory party. But then Rishi Sunak said last weekend, "Are you all enjoying the hot weather?" He's such a weirdo. You all enjoying the hot weather. People have been coming up to me and complimenting me on my tan, which is absolutely a
direct line,
straight out of Charlie Williams. And as the vote gets closer, they're sort of weird hustings.
We should point out, Chris, by the way, that Charlie Williams was also a professional footballer.
He was for Doncaster.
So it is very relevant, exactly. It's not just a mindless plug for your show in Edinburgh. No.
To the 4 people who are listening who will be going.
Yeah,
to Edinburgh.
Yeah, exactly. Heaven forfend.
But as the vote gets closer, I'm expecting him to say that Rishi is, of course, an anagram of Irish. And there were these two Irishmen, and they saw a sign saying, wanted tree fellers. And one said,
yeah.
You know, will you look at that? There's only two of us, to be sure.
Sure, indeed. Yeah. The other things I noticed has happened during the, why the football season has been in abeyance, which it never is, really.
Was that
Qatar, the host for the World Cup, lost a friendly to Linfield.
Did they? Oh, gross.
Yes.
Well, I noticed that Qatar are having, they're already in a training camp for the World Cup. The Qatar team are having a six-month training camp. They're taking all their international players out of competitive football for 6 months and playing, you know, friendlies against Linfield and whoever. And it sounds like a crazy notion, but the last people who did it, the last team that did it, was South Korea in 2002. They had a six-month training camp and got to the semi-finals. Yeah. So who knows? Who knows? Anyway, the close season, as you say...
What the odds are.
Exactly. But the close season is, as you say, always a dull, dead time, especially when it's an even-numbered year and FIFA have moved the World Cup to November. You know how that always happens. You know how terrible the summers are when that happens. But I think we should move on to, you know, the main football story in the world of at least English football, the Lionesses winning the Euro... The Women's Euros last Saturday,
yes,
last Sunday.
Yes, and a nation celebrated.
A nation celebrated in a rather enthusiastic and yet odd way.
When you said the big story, I thought you were going for the Agatha Christie, obviously.
There was that also.
Well, yeah, which, can I just say, you know, you talk about priorities, you talk about the news, and that Agatha Christie story was the top story on the news. And it was the same day that Agatha Christie story was the top story on the news that the last episode of Neighbours was shown. So where these they put one ahead of another, I've no idea.
I know, yeah. No, that was mystifying. I presume you watched that. The last episode of Neighbours.
I have got it on. I watch it quite a lot.
You've got it on tape and you watch it all the time.
Yes.
And did you record it on VHS just for old time's sake?
Yes.
Because it was from the 1980s.
Well, so that it could go next to the first episode of Neighbours that I've got.
I was very pleased to see Shane. Shane turned up, didn't he?
Yes. Yeah. And Shane now a multimillionaire as well. Anyway, we may be getting off the subject slightly.
You watch Neighbours. You watch the finale of Neighbours. Did you watch the Women's Euros? Did you watch the tournament or did you just watch the final? Or what was your...
No, do you know what? I watched the tournament and didn't watch the final.
Oh, no. How did that happen?
I'm not really sure. I went to Chester Races.
Calendar dysfunction?
No. I went to Chester Races and they seemed to think that people at the races would rather watch the racing.
Well, that's an interesting approach. I was playing cricket on Sunday afternoon. So I was pretty cheesed off. I couldn't understand why it wasn't an evening kickoff like all the others, and I'd been able to watch it. But I was trying to organise a game with an ever dwindling group of players as the ladies' team progressed through the tournament.
Yeah.
And one of my bowlers pulled out late the night before. Once you realised that there was a clash, another one got a ticket for Wembley and pulled out. But there you go. You know, if you don't want that sort of thing to happen, don't run a cricket team. But Michael, my son, and I played and got back, having neglected to set the game to record, looked for it on iPlayer, which is simultaneously miraculous and utter shit. And this is how spoiled we are nowadays. We managed to watch it as live from the start, but it disappeared forever halfway through extra time. Forever. And it was as if it had never happened. You search on iPlayer for Germany versus England, it offered you Germany versus England under 19 international from a month ago, or Finland against Germany. But we were just watching it. How can iPlayer not have even heard of it now? It was absolutely fucking mystifying. And in the end, obviously, we were trying to find it. We saw the result, couldn't help it, and watched the highlights. So it was good, but a bit frustrating, which is football, isn't it?
I wonder if that might be just something to do with UEFA, because I know that they're very unhappy about having, like, World Cups or European Championship finals being reshown because they want to sell them via DVD or that sort of thing, or make the official film of the game
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I got into the tournament quite sort of gradually, as it happens. You know, the thing is, with the in a summer where there's no Euros, no men's Euros and no men's World Cup, And then suddenly there's a tournament and there's football on every night. Obviously, I'm going to watch that, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
Obviously. And about halfway through the 8-0 win over Norway, I started really getting into it. And there was also, suckering me in, a promotion by Green King. Did you see this? Which offered a pint, a free pint, if you walk into one of their pubs while the match is on and have the same surname as one of the squad, which my sons and I have. Beth England, the striker, who never got on, didn't get a kick as far as I saw. But there's a newspaper cutting of her stuck on our fridge, which goes, England wins it for England. That headline is my dream. And, you know, ours too.
Yeah, of course.
But she was there. She was number 19. So I was after my free pint. And I tried to make the case in the Green King pub that as I had the same surname as the actual squad, I should be entitled to 23 pints.
Yes.
But, you know, after a bit of haggling, a bit of friendly give and take on both sides, we reached a compromise that suited everyone, which was that I would leave the pub and never come back.
Was that really true?
I got my son to do the asking just to see what would happen. But anyway, I thought some of the games were quite interesting tactically. You know, it was interesting that the Spanish team looked like the men's team. They seemed to be like a national characteristic of ball possession and high pressing. I was also interested that, you know, in men's football, you talk about the high press, you know, the gegenpress and all of that. But women's coaches, Emma Hayes particularly, when she's talking about it, she'll not only talk about the high press, but she'll talk about playing low as if that's an acceptable opposite. You know, it ought to make sense, but it sounds weird to me. You know, so playing low as a description of playing around at the back, you know, it didn't sound right to me anyway.
No, well, I mean, I saw a lot of it, and I've watched a lot of international women's football before, it felt like it was a far more tactical tournament than any of the tournaments I've seen before. And do you know, it was really kind of ruined for me. I mean, I loved it. I thought it was great, and I loved the fact there was, you know, no storming of the gates and no descent and very little simulation. And it was over quite quickly, rather than having an extra round in the middle like the World Cup does.
Yeah, and there was also a cheeky backheel nutmeg goal, which ought to be on, you know, the highlights, the title sequence of something. Question of sport forever.
Yes. And the thing was, she really should have scored with the first attempt.
I was still saying that as she put it in, I think.
She
should have scored. Yeah. Oh, she has.
Do you know what really depressed me was the morning after the final? I think this was in The Athletic. There was a long article saying how brilliant it was that they managed to run down the clock for the last 12 minutes.
Oh.
And I thought, that's such a shame. And they put... Isn't it great? Because Lucy Bronze took 46 seconds to take a throw in, and the goalkeeper did this, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, there was no sense of irony or disappointment. This was like, you see, finally, the women's game comes of age.
Yeah, and finally, finally they could play as disreputably as the men. I mean, there were some tactical things that I think, let's say, Gareth Southgate should take to heart, I think. I mean, I thought that Serena Wiegman, the Dutch coach of the England team, 19 games unbeaten, 20 I think now, 19 going into the final. One thing she absolutely bought into every time was the idea that it's a 16-player game, and that, you know, you play two strikers, a lone striker and a backup striker in the first half, take them off, put two fresh strikers on in the second half. Did it in every game, worked in every game. And, you know, this is something that men's managers, I think, don't go for quite so much, because it feels like, I mean, with Guardiola, for instance, you look at any Pep Guardiola game, when it starts going badly for him, he's not changing it around. He's doggedly sticking with his original lineup. Though it's a test of his machismo, you know, he doesn't want to admit that he might have been wrong, you know.
Yeah. And that's what drives me mad often when I'm watching a game, is that, and again, I think it's because it would be some sort of admission of an error to change at halftime. They wait till 60 minutes, and 60 minutes is the magic time that means that it was pre-planned.
Yeah.
Which is just balmy. Yeah, yeah. It's completely balmy. And it's just not enough time, really, because, you know, it's going to take 5 minutes for the substitution to happen at the start, you know, and then they've got to get up to the speed of the game and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm very pleased for the Lionesses. I thought it was great. But I feel the need to take issue with some of the coverage, particularly in the aftermath, which is the idea that this win is the end of 56 years of Hurt. I mean, I can see that people are hoping against hope that it might just be the end of Three Lions. But, you know, think again. David Baddiel has written new lyrics for it, which contain, I noticed the line, Beth Mead screaming. And they played it, didn't they, at an event the night before the final. So that damn song's going nowhere. And I think the only hope would be if one of the squad had been called Caroline, and then they might have had to give way to Neil Diamond forever. But the thing is, it's not the same. It's not the same Hurt. The 56 years of Hurt relates to 1966, the men's team. And and even though, I dispute the maths on that, because the Hurt didn't really get underway until the quarterfinal in 1970. So up to then, the first 4 years of our alleged Hurt was us swaggering around banging on about how we're the world champions. But
except losing to Scotland, of course, 3-2.
Yeah, but you can lose to Scotland in 1967 and go, yeah, but we're the world champions. You lose to Yugoslavia in the semi-final of the Euros in 68. Yeah, but we're the world champions. Yeah. Until Gordon Banks got the food poisoning. I think this is different. I mean, I don't feel that this is the end of that quest any more than I did when Johnny Wilkinson kicked the drop goal in 2003 or when Joss Butler ran out Martin Guptill in 2019. They're all great. They're great, but it's not on that calculation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think it does the women's team a massive disservice. I mean, I know it's amusing that there was a meme about the women getting it done, you know, because the men couldn't do it kind of thing. But there's only been a women's international team since 1972. So 50 is the maximum amount of Hurt they can lay claim to, unless you count the period from 1921 to 1972, when women's football was banned from any football ground under the control of the FA, so all of the big men's grounds, in which case, 101 years of Hurt. You know, why not that? Or you could start counting from the first international women's tournament, which was in 1984. And so that's only 38 years, you know, of Hurt. Yep. And whatever. The important thing is, it's not the same thing we're counting. I think the women deserve their own statistic. That's what I think. I think it's demeaning to expect their misery to be subservient to ours. Obviously, if Baddiel is in charge, then we're talking 4 days of Hurt now, because he starts counting at the point when they last won something. So you see, it's 4 days of Hurt. That's my point.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, the thing about you said the first tournament was 1984, didn't you? And basically, the Lionesses, as we're now meant to call them, have got better and better each tournament.
Yeah.
So actually, not really a lot of Hurt going on there.
Not really. I mean, they were third and then fourth, weren't they, in the World Cups, in the most recent World Cups, I think. Anyway, with the resurgence of interest in women's football, do I mean resurgence or is it just surgence? There's been some excited speculation I've seen about whether Michael Owen's daughter fulfilled the residency requirements to represent Love Island. I don't know whether at any future. But anyway, shall we?
I just thought Love Island was the place where the love boat goes to dock and be mended.
It's a stop on the cruise. On the cruise of the Love Boat. And then next stop, Fantasy Island.
Next was Fantasy Island, yes, of course, yeah. And then Skull Island. Anyway, I think we're going to take a little break there and we'll be back for more nonsense and reminiscence and moment.
I'll do the reminiscence. Is that right? Yeah. Okay.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
So welcome back. And do you know, we're actually doing a live version of this podcast, which given how hard we find it when we're actually recording it, I don't know what it's going to be like. But I think it's going to be good fun. It's at the podcast festival in London. It's at 7 o'clock, the 11th of September, which is Sunday, at King's Place. Which is in King's Cross. And you just look up King's Place, Sloping Pitch, King's Place. You will find it and you can book tickets. And it would be great to see some of you and maybe be able to have a chat and all that stuff. Also, you'll be able to find it on the blurb about the show. And of course, this a regular slot now for the lower leagues.
Well, not even the lower leagues anymore. The outside the lower leagues, below the lower leagues. Yeah. Of course,
one of the higher leagues.
We're in a place now where we're in the top division of teams that are not anymore in the league. And of course, the self-styled best league in the world kicks off on Saturday, as does, as we're saying, the most depressing non-league to find yourself in after 115 years of proper league football, the National League, which is where my club, Oldham Athletic, will be wallowing helplessly for the first time, wondering how this happened. The answer to that, of course, is the disastrous tenure of Abdallah Lemsegam, the Moroccan former football agent, who installed his brother Mo as an utterly unsackable director of football. And the pair of them have overseen our four-year decline from League One to what they're calling the fifth tier. When relegation finally occurred, our prospects of bouncing back looked slim, as even though Lemsgam was supposed to be willing to sell up and ship out, the chance of this actually happening was hampered by his not owning the ground, which was still owned by the previous owners who dreamed of building houses on it, and by his refusal to answer the phone to any potential bidders. There'd been one fellow, I think you remember, we spoke about before, who wanted to finance a deal with cryptocurrency, who turned out to be, and I'm quoting here, this isn't my line, this is an article about him, a delusional fantasist who appeared on Come Dine With Me sticking carrots up his nose. I haven't invented that. I'm quoting that.
No, but still an improvement on Lemsegam.
Narrowly, but yeah, maybe. We dream of Lemsegam standing still long enough for people to shove carrots up his nose. But anyway, then 5 weeks ago, with the club apparently only a couple of days from liquidation, it was announced that an unspecified local business had bought the club and also, miraculously, the ground, with the deal expected to take 4 weeks, which it did. And there was a press conference just a week ago. And despite attempts to keep the buyer's identity secret, it turned out to be the bloke that everyone thought it probably was right at the beginning, a chap called Frank Rothwell. And what a character, in inverted commas, he has turned out to be. He reminded me of Count Arthur Strong. Do you know Count Arthur Strong?
Yes, I do.
Comedy character, very, very popular on Radio 4, who I saw live a couple of months ago. It was very, very funny. But anyway, either that or possibly a sporting character in a Wallace and Gromit film. And he had a flat cap. That is like a parody of the guy that you wanted to see. Had a flat cap and a pint of beer, and not just any beer, J.W. Lee's, the brewery that used to own and sponsor us in the 80s. And Oldham fans have been hating the flat cap, despite our northern location, because our much-despised sporting director used to sport one. In fact, that may be his only claim to justify the word sporting. It is job title. But now that he's been spotted carting a coffee machine out to the car park, it's boom time for the flat cap merchants of Oldham once again. Frank Rothwell, who has made his pile with a business called Manchester Cabins, unleashed a stream of sometimes odd, sometimes contradictory statements. But the mood at the press conference was more than forgiving. It was euphoric. Okay. That bloke off Come Dine With Me? Forget him. Frank was on the island with Bear Grylls and got into difficulty swimming across a bay when he'd specifically been told that it was too dangerous and he had to be rescued, nearly died. He kicked off the press conference by saying, "I've got two Guinness World Records and the only steam-powered Land Rover in existence." It's fantastic. It's a hell of a start. And his records are...
But it's a CV. It's a CV for owning a club, isn't it?
Yeah, you have to be, have craziness in your life. I mean, you know, his records, I think, are to do with his rowing across the Atlantic single-handedly at the age of 70, just a couple of years ago, to raise money for Alzheimer's research. Now, he went on a thing about Boundary Park having the same number of toilets for women as for men, which doesn't make sense to me. And he had to be steered off that. And I'm not quite sure what he was getting at. Whether there are there too many women's toilets? Are there not enough women's toilets? Where was he heading? And he said, "You know what? We need a new song. I think we should be singing that Chumbawamba." And you know, 72-year-old man trying to persuade fans to sing Chumbawamba. You know, it doesn't get better than that. And he was sucking up to the fans, of course, and heaped praise on the little pillock with the drum, who's ruined many an away trip for me. Oh, and at one point, he said he agreed with Maggie. He said, "I agree with Maggie that pitch invaders should be put in jail," which is also now the FA's position, I see. But
yes, and also, didn't every single Oldham fan invade a pitch?
Yes, and I think this is the point. And some of them are still banned for that. Club bans, right. Not police bans. So he could overturn those things, or he could pursue them and put them in jail. Let's see, which he does. And also, while on the... I don't like the idea that someone comes in, they've bought my football club, and I agree with Margaret Thatcher. That's on his first day, you know. But anyway, and on the Bear Grylls programme, he was wearing Manchester City shorts, which is also another thing. But he has a local accent and a flat cap, and he drinks warm beer. He has Joe Royal on board as director and advisor, and Darren Royal, Joe's lad, running things. He wants us all to get behind, you know, avowedly club legend John Sheridan. Most importantly of all, he's not Moroccan, and he hasn't made his wholly unqualified brother into a sporting director. So things are looking up. Is that right? I mean, it's confusing. Good. You know, strange feelings of optimism, unsettling. And this should have passed by next week, just in time for us to lose at home to Dorking Wanderers. And Frank and his wife are going to Torquay for the season opener on Saturday, on a motorbike, by the way, and, you know, not at all worrying that.
No. But sidecar?
I'm hoping against hope for a sidecar. But anyway,
you get to play a bloke like that, and he's fantastic. But you know that he's going to have plans for the club, and that's always a worry. All you want is the money.
Yes. Well, that's true.
And somebody to spend it
that's
properly.
True. But I mean, I think what he seems to have bought into, which is very encouraging, is the thought that the club belongs to the local community and is an important beacon within the community, which is, and it's, the club has just been neglected for so long. The stadium's falling apart. I have no idea how many women's toilets there are now. No.
When you say he's bought the ground, so because one of the stands was owned
the footprint, as it were, and the north stand, were owned by the previous owner, and he had long cherished plans to build houses on all this, on all the land, on the training ground, on the car park, on the pull the stadium down. And what's happened is this guy, Frank Rothwell, is Oldham Council's business liaison. This is one of his roles, one of his many roles. Apart from, you know, he goes from business to business in a steam powered Land Rover and helping them to. he was able to get the council to make it clear to Simon Blitz, the previous owner, that it didn't matter how long he waited and how many applications he made, he was never going to be allowed to build houses on it. And so he threw up his hands and sold it at a knockdown price. Not desperately knocked down, but less than he was asking for. And so, you know, it's a great coup that he's pulled off. And obviously, I hope for the best and wish him well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's got, for want of a better phrase, good reviews.
Yes, he has.
People seem to generally, and of course, it's, you know, if you're going to go on, you want to go on after a really bad act.
you do.
You don't want to go on, you know, you don't want to be David Moyes.
Yeah.
You don't want to be going on after Alex Ferguson.
No, exactly. Yeah.
And so after Lemsagram is a good, that's a good
and another, you don't, also, you don't want to be handpicked by Lemsagram, do you? So anyway, how Stoke started the season? You mentioned that they'd made it to the bottom of the table earlier than ever before in history.
And the thing about Stoke is, actually, they've got brilliant owners, and they spend their money really wisely, and they've got a great academy, and everything is really good at the club, except for on the pitch, where it is just dire. Do you know what I mean? It's just awful. And then this summer, and it's difficult because of financial fair play, you know, and it looks like we're building a really, really good squad, but we're building it for the 2018-19 season because we're buying players who are just past their best. You know, Aidan Flint and Gail and you know, and Nick Powell to some extent. And so it's really, really, it's just a bit depressing. And they had a terrible preseason, and everybody says, oh, you shouldn't look at preseason. And then the first game was just dire, you know, just dire. You know, you start the season not with a bang, but a whimper, which is exactly what we did. And it's, very close to not having a season ticket, which is, you know, would be incredible, for me. but it's just so frustrating. Because I couldn't tell you what it is we're trying to do on the pitch. And I haven't been able to tell you that for about 3 years. It's very, very, very confusing.
Well, that is a difficult thing if you're watching a team and you can't divine what it is they're trying to do. You know, that always used to be the thing with in Joe Royle's era at Oldham. You knew what the plan was. Whoever was on the pitch, it was to they had the scrappers in the middle of the field to win the ball and get it out wide because the fullbacks overlapped and we had two wingers, and then we had Frankie Bunn and Andy Ritchie and Roger Palmer in the middle who were all good at heading. And so you knew what they were trying to do, and it's a long time since I knew what Oldham were trying to do.
Well, this is exactly it. We spent the last 3 years putting in crosses and having nobody in the box. You know, it's been driving me mad. And every time we get a play, you think, the missing piece of the jigsaw. it'd have to be a bloody big piece. but it's a bit like you think, that could work. Yeah, that's just the sort of player we want. And it reminds me of nothing quite so much as buying a Henry Hoover. You know, when you think, that'll be able to get round corners because it's round, but actually
actually terrible at corners.
And we conceded two from corners on Saturday to the son of an ex-Stoke player.
Oh, who was that?
Cresswell, Richard Cresswell's son. Exactly.
But anyway,
and now we're basically putting all of our hopes on getting a 19-year-old boy to come and change everything.
A particular one or just a generic 19-year-old?
Liam Delap. But it has been, it's been depressing. Well, and I've got a terrible feeling it's going to carry on.
That's football,
depressing.
Mate. That's football for you. I mean, look, it's the same in looking at the Premier League. The Premier League bandwagon rolling once again, and the clubs all having benefited from a transfer window. The thing that I've been finding—we shouldn't really pick out the things that we find depressing and will turn people off. But the thing that I've been finding depressing is the predictions for what might happen this season. And I was particularly taken with one on the BBC website that predicted, City would finish narrowly ahead of Liverpool and that every other club would finish within two places of where they finished last season, apart from Villa. I think they backed Villa for a little daring surge. But everyone, in other words, football is and has been for years a mean-spirited project to arrange all the clubs in financial order. And this is what league does, and this is what the pundits buy into. The pundits buy into this. Mm-hmm. Oh, they've spent this much money, so they'll go up one place or they go down one place. I mean, even Newcastle, Newcastle's Saudi money is expected to lift them from 11th to 9th. And, that's good value sports washing right there. And I think it's always depressing that the promoted clubs are routinely given no chance at all at the beginning. The teams predicted to go down are the three that came up. Even though Forest have backed Steve Cooper with £100 million worth of signings, including the most eye-catching of all, Jesse Lingard, who was free. Keeper Dean Henderson, who's brilliant and on loan. And they've also paid Huddersfield the great compliment after nearly losing to them in the playoff final of going back and nicking their best players. So, Forest must have a chance of doing better than that.
They bought 16 players.
Because they've spent £100 million, but no one's really more than like 15, 16 million, I think. They've got a load. I mean, there are across the Premiership, of course, big name transfers to watch out for. We saw two of them, didn't we, last weekend in the Community Shield. Haaland and Darwin Núñez facing off. And Haaland looked really dangerous, I think, until he shanked an open goal in injury time. Núñez came on a sub and changed the game. So I think, a little victory for him there.
Yeah, but I think I think you're exactly right. And that I read Alan Shearer's predictions for the season, and, you know, they're going to say, oh, I can't see it being any different to last time. It's going to be Man City.
Well, yeah, because that would require imagination.
Well, yes, but also, like you say, he says, and who would want it to be any different? Well, me.
Well,
I think
it's hard not to see that Spurs and Chelsea and Arsenal and even Manchester United are going to be better than they were last year. You know, Spurs have bought some great players. I think, you know, they've not lost any of them. They've not lost Kane. They've not lost Son. They've got now Richarlison as well, Perisic, Bissouma. They've had Conte has had a pre-season with his team, and he has famous pre-seasons. Tales of players vomiting during training and being pushed to the absolute. Son was carried out of the stadium in Seoul.
Would it be possible, you know, if they are vomiting at training, for Alan to go round with his little shiv?
You get Alan to go and do the swimming, but you'd never get him inside a football stadium. You know that. It's Sheffield United.
That's true. That is true, of course. But talking of transfers, I mean, obviously, Dean Henderson one's quite funny because, obviously, he's furious with Manchester
United. For wasting
a
year of his life, I think.
And Manchester United... I've had troubles with it. I saw Ronaldo left the ground after the first half in a friendly. But I really enjoyed Ronaldo, who reminds me of nothing more than of Shelley Winters, a sort of down at heel former
good time girl
desirable. Wandering from club to club, banging on the door with her dressing gown flapped open in the hope of getting some action.
Yeah, and it was funny, wasn't it, Ronaldo missing, walking out when he was taken off against Rayo Vallecano in a pre-season game, going off before the end. I'm presuming that's just an innocent traffic issue. Wanted to get away before the crowd, you know, like Panda's dad, you know, just wanted to get away.
Yes.
But he's struggling, isn't he, Ronaldo? Because he's been agitating for a move all summer as a way of being the story, I think, mostly. But Real Madrid don't want him back. Barcelona don't want him because he was at Real Madrid. Juventus don't want him back. And there was a brilliant quote, did you see, from Atletico Madrid when he was briefly linked with them. And the quote went, "The aforementioned player represents the antithesis of the values that constitute the hallmarks of our Atleti, such as effort, generosity, simplicity, and humility." even in the unlikely event that a player in frank decline, like Cristiano Ronaldo, could secure us a title, we would not accept his signing. And they went on to admit that as far as the diving and cheating side of things was concerned, he'd fit right in. Of course, it's Diego Simeone.
What's worse than turning down a player?
we're not interested in this guy who's in frank decline. There was big transfer news. Danny Drinkwater left Chelsea. You know, hands up who thought he was still at Chelsea. He left Chelsea. Yeah, only a couple of weeks. And Raheem Sterling went to Chelsea. That could be a big change.
And Cucurella,
I was very taken with the headline when Raheem Sterling was explaining why he had gone to Chelsea from Manchester City. And he said, I was impressed. The headline said, Sterling impressed by Tuchel vision. And I can't help think hearing Tuchel, Tuchel vision.
Is that meant to be
Tuchel,
Tuchel vision?
Yeah, exactly.
Is that what it's
meant to be? And, obviously he's referring to the short passing game, you know, to me, to you.
Well, you'd have thought if he signed for Rotherham, he could actually have been impressed by Tuchel vision.
Yeah, exactly. And you've got to feel sorry for poor old Tommy Tuchel, you know, heartbroken by the loss of his partner, you know, Romelu Lukaku over the summer.
Yes.
I like also at Chelsea, they've signed Kalidou Koulibaly, who's going to be a good signing, I think. And he apparently wanted the number 26 shirt because he's had it at previous clubs. But it hasn't been used at Chelsea since John Terry retired. Or went to Villa, it was the same thing.
Right.
He called John Terry, Kalidou Koulibaly, who gave him the green light after first thinking it was a joke that he was even being asked. But he gave him the green light apparently on condition that if Koulibaly wins any trophies in the shirt, John Terry gets to go up and collect them. So that's something to look forward to. I mean, I have to say I'm a little bit disappointed by Christian Eriksen going to Manchester United. I mean, because that was such a nice story last year, the story of his comeback at Brentford. I think it would have been nice for him to stay there. But football isn't like that, is it?
No, it's not like that. And, you know, it's one of the great depressing things that when almost any English footballer is interviewed, they're asked, you know, who their favourite team is, and it's Manchester United.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention one apparently rule change to the game.
Is this kick-ons?
No, it's not. They've changed some rules. They've changed the five subs up from three. They've changed the multi-ball thing, where apparently now the fourth official is going to have a ball at all times so that he can do nonchalant keepy-uppies while managers berate him for decisions he wasn't involved in. But the really odd one is they've changed the rule about keepers having one foot on the line when a penalty is taken. Okay, now they can start behind the line, right in the goal if they want, and have a run-up. So that as long as they've got one foot on the line when the ball is kicked, but they're allowed to run up. And it's just, I can't tell whether this is a problem that needed fixing. And I'd be interesting to see who's the first keeper to get tangled up in the net and fall over his face.
Yes. Yeah. So it's going to be really like the long jump, isn't it? The moment they hit the line.
Aren't clubs now going to have to look at the depth of the net that they've got to give their keeper a chance of running out? You know, it's bizarre.
Well, just to finish up on keepers, by the way, did you see the Danish keeper who got in trouble? And when he does his warm up, he pulls the post in, and then he pulls the other post in, and they worked out that he'd got a 20-centimeter difference in the size of the ball. So about moving the goalposts.
Absolutely.
Anyway, that's us. Please, if you can, come and see us live, because otherwise it'll just be me and Chris.
Right now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business?
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.